keep moving and don't make any decisions that any watcher can track.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From the heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. And welcome to our humble bunker. We're on the second floor, of course, of the...
Bunker Annex.
We're in the Bunker Annex. Many things going on in the Annex these days, but we won't go to that. There's too much in the news.
There's a lot going on in the world this week, much of which went unnoticed because of Balloon Boy. In a stunt which one wag has described as JonBenet Ramsey meets MTV's Jackass, which I think is very apt.
I think that's a good way to put it. Oh, gosh, there are so many things. But the main thing is not to concentrate on Balloon Boy,
no.
As tempting as it is.
Right. Everybody else is doing that. And as you know from listening to PID Radio for a while, we believe that whenever the media is fixated on one thing, we should look somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of going on under the rocks out there. And in fact, one of them took place this morning.
Really?
Yeah, over in Iran.
Oh, yes.
Near the border with Pakistan.
Homicide bomber took out some key members of the Revolutionary Guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two top. One was a deputy general, and the other one was an officer as well. Two of the leaders of the Revolutionary Guard, a very elite unit. They were there supposedly to make nice with the local tribes leaders. And why on earth the Revolutionary Guard would be called into a meeting with the local tribes leaders as a means to show. It's sort of like, okay, the United States military coming in to talk with the local Tea Party group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially. Now, this is the area on the border with Pakistan that is inhabited by the Baluchi tribe, B-A-L-U-C-H-I. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. Mm-hmm. It's an area that's known for, well, being essentially lawless. A lot of drug trafficking, smuggling, other sorts of things. Warlords essentially control the area, both on the Pakistani side and on the Iranian side. The group that has claimed responsibility for the bombing is called...
Jindala,
right. I was trying to look up the word here, so I got it correct. The group has been responsible for other homicide bombings in that area against Iranian targets in the past. The government of Iran, perhaps not surprisingly, has blamed the United States and the United Kingdom for being involved, or for being responsible for the bombing. And, of course, both governments have denounced the bombing and disclaimed any responsibility. However... In 2007, ABC News, Brian Ross, their head of their investigative unit, reported that Jindala, which is made up of members of this Baluchi tribe, was at the very least being guided and advised by American sources, the CIA. Now, U.S. officials say that the relationship with Jindala was arranged so that the United States provides no funding, which, of course, provides plausible deniability. It's not our money that went into that bomb. Right.
We did the nose.
Yeah. The funding is likely coming from a proxy like Saudi Arabia, which is not too surprising. We've had sort of
it's
covert...
It's the modus operandi of covert ops over and over again. In fact, you were talking with the Frog Brothers...
Yes, Paul and Philip
...about
Cullen.
That very thing last night.
In sort of a roundabout way. This is an interview that'll be posted as a View from the Bunker interview in 2 weeks' time. And we were talking about Dominionism. And that, of course, being that heretical strain of Christianity that believes we need to physically create heaven on earth. It takes the transcendent... Mm-hmm. That which we as humans cannot apprehend or comprehend in our physical form and makes it immanent, meaning of the here and now, a physical manifestation, which is where they get their phrase.
Immanentizing
the eschaton. Right. We're bringing the end of days into the here and now. So in the context of that interview, we mentioned the Edwin Wilson covert CIA operation with Libya, in which Wilson... trained Muammar Gaddafi's military, provided them with monstrously huge amounts of C4, which may have gone into the bomb that brought down Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. Wilson was later denounced as a rogue operative and tossed in jail. There you go. Similar thing happening in Baluchistan, apparently, where the United States, through proxies like Saudi Arabia, and again, Paul and Philip have done a lot of research into the covert intelligence ops between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, a group that was called the Safari Club, in order to execute policy in the Middle East without direct involvement of the United States government. Mm-hmm. So,
and this sort of thing only really makes sense if you look at it from a spiritual viewpoint.
Right, because from the
physical... It goes back to those 70 nations
mm-hmm.
and how they're warring with each other.
Right, and the Deuteronomy 32 song from Moses recounting the history of the Hebrews, in which Moses reveals that, or at least reminds the Israelites mm-hmm. that the number of the nations, you know, after the Tower of Babel, the nations were numbered mm-hmm. according to the number of the sons of
right,
God.
Right, the so-called Table of Nations.
Yeah,
passage.
And these B'nai Elohim that were placed over the 70 nations, God essentially stood back and mm-hmm. said, okay, as he kind of did with the Hebrews when they demanded a king. You want a physical leader, a king? Okay, you'll get one. You're not going to like it. And essentially, that's what he did to the world after the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be run, but you want to worship these fallen angels who worked for me? Okay, you're not going to like it. I'm reserving one people group for myself, one nation for myself.
And I think that's one of the reasons that if you take a look at geopolitics, it's as clear as mud.
Convoluted.
Because it is so convoluted, and
right.
it's because there are spiritual components, and these spiritual entities are way older than you and I.
Mm-hmm.
As old as I am, they're older than I am.
Fee. Right.
You talk to the Frog Brothers about this, and I think it's so the Collins Brothers, mm-hmm. and I think it's so we lovingly call them the Frog
right. not,
Brothers.
Right, not meaning derision at all. It's a term of endearment.
No, I love that movie. And of course, this morning it's so interesting that that takes place at a time when the whole Iranian-Israel question mm-hmm. is way up in the air. Time has run out. If I'm correct, I think the countdown that Obama gave to Iran to allow the IAEA inspectors has come and gone, that deadline has come and gone. And correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think it has. The new so-called new reactor that was unveiled during the G20 meeting. The G20 meeting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That has to be allowed inspection, which Iran isn't going to allow to do. But Obama, had he really wanted inspection, he would have said, you will allow them in today.
Yeah.
No, they had 2 to 3 weeks, and I can't remember which one it was, but I do. Again, I think that deadline has come and gone. They were given time to scrub the place. That's assuming El Baradei is going to give any kind of a fair evaluation of what's going on there anyway. He tends to lean toward the Arab mm-hmm. side in all of this.
Right.
Also at this time are the Juniper Cobra exercises that will be beginning on Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
Tuesday the 20th. They are involving the United States, Israel. They were going to involve Turkey. I don't know if Turkey is going to be in there or not, because Turkey was supposed to have exercises with Israel just before the original date for the Juniper Cobra exercises were actually this past spring, and they mm-hmm. were changed to this fall. And the original fall date was October 12th, Columbus Day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that came and went, and Israel said on the day before that, no, we're not going to do it because we're mad at Turkey. And all of the U.S. assets were in place.
Yeah, it was a last-minute thing.
And this is a big exercise. Do you remember last year, 2008, I think it was February of 2008, the L-21 satellite that was shot down from the Hawaii location by one of our ships? Oh, it couldn't quite get up to its height up, you know, circling the Earth, and it's going to hit someplace. So as it comes down, we're just going to shoot it.
Just to make sure that it doesn't damage anything.
Right.
Yeah, really was a test of the missile system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that same missile system is in place as part of the Juniper Cobra exercises.
Mm.
Now, there are rumors that we're going to leave that there.
Israel gets it. Well, considering the missile tests being conducted by Iran, that's not too surprising. Mm-mm. Not too surprising at all. But circling back around to this whole the thing that took place this morning, Sunday, October 18th, at the bombing in Iran by Jandala, the separatist group.
The ice cream truck's going by.
Well, what perfect timing.
I know.
He's got no markings on the side.
and a satellite dish on top.
Yeah, satellite dish on top. Jandala, according to some sources, was formerly headed by none other than Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the so-called mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. And yet today, we are, the CIA is reportedly providing at least tactical advice and guidance to Jandala, if not funding. The funding, again, United States CIA spokesman talking to ABC's Brian Ross said, we don't give them any funding. Again, plausible deniability.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, the Baluchis are Sunni. Iran is a Shia nation. Al-Qaeda, with which Jandala is linked, is also a Sunni organization. And Saudi Arabia is a Sunni,
organization.
Nation.
Right.
So, strange bedfellows. And again, it's so convoluted and twisted, you know. Getting back to the covert intelligence arrangements with Saudi Arabia and the Safari Club, the so-called off-the-books arrangement between the CIA and Saudi intelligence, we purportedly, as a nation, are Israel's best friend in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you look at what we're actually doing behind the scenes with these arrangements, the secret arrangements with the Saudis, and providing advice and guidance to groups like MEK and Jandala, mm-hmm. Terrorist organizations inside Iran, and the fact that we essentially are responsible for the Taliban. I mean, that's a product of the religious schools, the madrasas in Pakistan, that were formed during the Carter administration to produce jihadis, mujahideen, that would fight the Russians in mm-hmm. Afghanistan. You have to wonder, whose side are we really on?
Well, most Israelis would say that Obama is not on their side.
Right, but most of this stuff took place during, you know, the Reagan years and the Bush 1 and mm-hmm. Bush 2. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it really only makes sense when you step back and look at the spiritual picture, because the physical picture, when you see all of these, you know, that we were training Muammar Gaddafi's military and providing it with explosives, it makes no sense on a physical standpoint. From a physical perspective, but when you look at the spiritual perspective, that these 70 nations were pretty much all aligned against Israel.
Well, speaking of alliances, yeah. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, Turkey had backed out. They had essentially said Israel could not participate in exercises that were to take place just a few days before the original date for Juniper Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
When Israel was kicked out of those, Israel got mad, said, look, we're canceling this because Turkey's supposed to be part of this whole thing, Juniper Cobra. So we're going to postpone it until we work through things. It was just a day or two later that Turkey came up and said, oh, by the way, we're your friends because, look, we found all of these terror cells.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to tell you who they are.
Oh, but they also announced at the same time that they were conducting military exercises with Syria.
Yes, I know. Turkey, and what I find so interesting about Turkey is a couple of things. One is that is the location for the Asia Minor churches from the Book of Revelation.
Yes.
Also, Turkey is Togarma,
mm-hmm.
which is mentioned in the Gog-Magog War. So Togarma is aligned with the Gog from the north,
huh.
is aligned against Israel. So this whole notion that Turkey is trying to play any game, mm-hmm. saying, we're your friend. Mm-hmm. No, they're not. No, they really are fundamentally aligned with Syria and Iran and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They are not aligned with the United States. However, the United States is deep in bed with Turkey because the military-industrial complex has put together this BTC pipeline.
Right, which connects to Turkey on the end.
Exactly.
To get to
we have to make nice with Turkey.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. These alliances and this web of intrigue only make sense if you look at the spiritual aspect. I mean, one of the things I find, you know, just stepping back for a second, one of the things I find most intriguing and disturbing about these alliances and the political machinations behind the scenes over the last 60 years, and things that we've, you know, interviewed people about and researched over the last 5 years, that it's pretty clear from open source information. I mean, not tinfoil conspiracy hat, but I mean mainstream, documented, reported before mm-hmm. Congress information, that the Muslim Brotherhood was essentially nurtured and propagated by Westerners, by first the Nazis and then the remnants of the Nazis after World War II, with the assistance of British and American intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit behind Nazism, this whole Aryan nations thing, you know, this outgrowth of, you know, Helena Blavatsky and her teachings, with the Aryan race being the chosen race, the descended from the gods sort of thing. And then when you look at when Persia became Iran, this was kind of an eye-opening head slap moment for me. Iran became Iran during the 30s when Hitler was at the peak of his power. Why? Mm-hmm. Because Iran means land of the Aryans.
Yes, exactly.
It's not a mistake. It's not a coincidence. It's
not a time when Hitler was sending representatives down to Tibet and surrounding areas.
Right, right. And it is also not a coincidence that the most radical elements of Islam today, you know, Fatah, Hamas, Hezbollah, name one, all use the Nazi salute. It's not a coincidence. There is no Arabic or Islamic analog for the Nazi salute. It is a Nazi salute because these guys were trained by the SS. So where does all this come from? And why were the Brits and the Americans responsible for training and propagating the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the font from which springs all of these radical Islamic groups today, including the Taliban and Al-Qaeda?
It's a really good question, and I'm going to ask you a question,
okay,
which is a story that came out today, and it's related, and I think you did a little research on it. This seems like a left turn, but it really isn't. It's again, part of taking a look at geopolitics and mm-hmm. trying to figure out how they work into the very convoluted web of spiritual entities. The story that came out today about a plane that was grounded in India.
Yeah.
There were U.S. military men on board. The plane was grounded because they had misidentified or failed to identify themselves correctly. It's a North American Airlines flight with, was it 250 Marines on board?
205 Marines.
205, sorry.
Had to land at Mumbai, or, you know, formerly known as Bombay.
Right, 205, they had chartered a private plane, supposedly 205 Marines flying to Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
They'd flown out of the United Arab Emirates. And remember, Dick Cheney essentially said that Dubai, mm-hmm. United Arab Emirates, is in many ways the new head of the Western business world.
Well, it's the capital. It's the new home office location
For Halliburton. Yes.
Yeah. Well, the research I did basically turned up a lot of dead ends, and with the amount of time that we had available today, I wasn't able to do a lot more.
I know.
More
we were you were trying to find out more about this airline. Was
right.
that it?
North American Airlines is basically a charter airline. It's got all of 10 airplanes,
mm-hmm.
but most of its work appears to be military charter. And I presume that in order to get that kind of work, you got to have some connections at the Pentagon.
Right.
But it's held by a holding company, which I'll have to look up the name again here. I believe it was Global Air. I don't want to get the name wrong, but it's essentially a holding company that owns a couple of different airlines. It was originally founded in Indianapolis mm-hmm. here back in 92, but it's gone through about four name changes. Had three airlines, one of which just shuttered operations in the spring of this year, and it owns a couple of airlines. Again, about 20 airplanes total in the company. Most of their work appears to be military charter work. And what I was trying to do with the research was try to determine whether there was any evidence, at least online, of its work as, you know, say in rendition flights or anything like that.
Exactly, exactly.
But didn't have
trying to figure out if this company is a cutout.
You're right. And if it is, it's not.
In other words, was this a secret operation that went awry?
Yeah, and we don't know.
No, we don't know.
It could be that these Marines were just flying to Bangkok for, you know, leave. You know, which is kind of disturbing in and of itself. 205 Marines running around loose in Bangkok.
That really is disturbing, especially if it really was chartered by the military.
Well, yeah.
Okay, we're going to spend military dollars to send these guys on shore leave to... Don't even go there. Don't even think about that.
Yeah, no.
But anyway, they had misidentified. This is the second time in a couple of months that this has happened over India, that a U.S. flight has had to be grounded, forced to land, and inspected by the Indian authorities because there was a mis-ID or a misrepresentation. Now, India is not on its way. I'm not saying that they had flown out of the United Arab Emirates and were crossing India to get to, say, Iran. It just doesn't go that way, unless they were planning on coming in, going over India, and then flying back in over Pakistan and coming in
that
way.
Which probably not going to happen either, because Pakistan and India don't get along well. So you probably that would be a lot more complicated than it would need to be, you'd think.
So I really don't know what was going on there.
Yeah. So anyway, bottom line is this charter aircraft, North American Airlines, which Global Aviation Holdings is the holding company. Global Aviation Holdings didn't have the proper clearance to fly over Indian airspace, so was forced to land. Mm-hmm. Don't know why. Don't know what they were doing. Kind of a curious side note to file away, because stories like this sometimes turn up being more than they appear to be on the surface.
Right, and that's what we try to do. We try to pick out those things, especially stuff that's taking place during a major world everybody look here event.
Yeah. And for all we know, frankly, this could be nothing more than these guys being redeployed someplace and being moved on a charter rather than on a military craft.
We
don't know enough about the way military operates to know whether they, you know.
Well, speaking of that, there was a story that I posted at PID News this last week. How one of the reasons that the Afghanistan war is costing so much is because the military pays $400 a gallon for gasoline.
Right.
And we burn up a lot of gasoline over there.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a lot, but honestly, it's flown from one location to another by a helicopter.
Right.
You burn up as much carrying it as you are provide. I mean, it's the opposite of a perpetual motion machine.
Well, yeah, moving gasoline by helicopter in bladders, you burn almost. It's almost a 1-to-1 trade off. You burn as much gasoline moving the fuel to the forward base in the helicopter as you actually transported, which
here's
means
your 400 gallons.
Now we're
400 gallons getting here.
Yep. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with more. and this is something that I had to learn in the business I'm in, which is, you know, better part of the last 15 years, I've been in essentially wholesale distribution of metal products, you know, pipe, steel, et cetera, and so forth. And the price you pay the mill for the material is one thing, but then you have to move it via truck or rail from the mill to your facility, and then you've got to move it from your facility to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
And so the actual cost the consumer pays, or at least the fabricator pays, who's buying the steel from us, is higher. I mean, not only do we have our profit margin in there, but the cost, the real cost of the material on which we have to base our markup, is higher because you've got to factor the freight cost in there. It just happens that the freight cost of moving a $3, just to round up, gallon of gasoline to a forward operating base in Afghanistan is about $397. So it just one more little bit of evidence that has led me to conclude that I can't see any national interest that's served by keeping our troops in Afghanistan.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you know,
there are a lot of businesses that are making a bunch of money.
Those are the only people who are making out on the steel.
Yeah.
Are the powerful contractors who are supplying the fuel and the services to our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq.
And the spiritual entities that
feed entities that feed on the death and destruction. And this is, getting back to Dominionism, where the rubber meets the road, I think, for Christians. Because we look at the United States' interest in foreign lands like Afghanistan and Iraq, and as patriots, we don't want to see the country, the nation, humiliated. But being realistic here and being Christians here, you have to look at what's going on over there and say, look, do we have a right to be involved in this nation's workings in trying to tell these people how they're supposed to live?
Mm-hmm.
And would it be better?
We wouldn't take it if they were over here.
No, we wouldn't. Would it be better for them to live according in a society where they elect their own representatives to govern? Sure. But should we stay over there with our military forces to force them to live that way at the point of a gun? Which raises the question as to whether they're really free if we're doing that anyway. But that's a whole other issue. What are we actually accomplishing over there besides shedding the blood of American servicemen and women and spending an awful lot of taxpayer dollars mm-hmm. at a time when we don't have a lot of extra dollars to spend? I don't see any real benefit from staying, especially in Afghanistan. Now, I don't know how we pull out of Iraq without letting the whole region fall into chaos. Frankly, we should have been out of there as soon as we caught Saddam Hussein.
We wouldn't have built that huge embassy if we were going to pull out. We wouldn't have the huge military base there.
We're not going anywhere. Afghanistan, frankly, at this point, I'd say just so long and thanks for all the fish, mm-hmm. and leave them to their own devices. The Brits couldn't hold it during Rudyard Kipling's day. The Russians couldn't hold it during Jimmy Carter's day. We're not going to hold it.
Even Sean Connery and Michael Caine couldn't take it.
That's right. You ever see The Men Who Would Be King?
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Kafiristan. Yes. No, it's not a place, because they've got more patience than we do. And they will just sit there and wait and bleed the United States dry, just as they bled the Russians dry for years. And mm-hmm. the Russians, frankly, were a lot more brutal in their effort
exactly.
to subdue the country than we
will
be.
And they know that the U.S. citizens, we have no stomach
right.
for what it would take. And honestly, we keep seeing the numbers 40,000 and 60,000. I've even seen 80,000. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I have seen a report that says that the only way to really win in Afghanistan is to go in with 400,000.
And we're not going to go there.
I don't even know if we have that many available troops.
Not unless we start pulling out from Europe or other places where
exactly.
we've got troops.
Which reminds me, there was a report out this past week that sign-ups are up, that more and more young people are joining the military, mm-hmm. frankly, because there are no jobs.
Yeah. First time in a long, long time that military recruiting quotas are being met. Mm-hmm. And while we salute young men and women who choose to serve and are willing to risk that in service of the country, it is one of the odd unintended consequences of the, consequences mm-hmm. of the economic collapse.
Yeah.
Well, it is a sad thing.
Well, I'm glad you said economic collapse, because that's something I want to get to next.
Well, good.
Nice little segue there.
Rapport, yes.
Because for several weeks, and of course, we didn't have a PID radio last week. We had an extra long VFTV, so we mm-hmm. hope that that gave you the listening time you were craving. But we have been talking for the last few shows about something that was in the web bots, the Half Past Human report, mm-hmm. saying that specific date of October 25th was going to be a very important date as far as what the web bots, mm-hmm. the time monks, have been able to discern based on internet chatter.
Right.
And the way that their protocols are set up, that they gather all sorts of information in various venues and entities. And I couldn't explain it. I can barely understand it, to be honest with you. It's sort of like reading something from a physics report mm-hmm. when I read through their explanations of how they do things. But the truth is that the web bots were able to pick up on a number of things over the past few years, past decade or so, and they've been right. Mm-hmm. So they're not 100% right. They are not prophets of the Lord. Only a prophet sent by Jehovah God mm-hmm. is 100% right. But these bots are picking up on something, and whether or not they're trends in the spiritual realm, I don't know. But they have proclaimed that this fall is going to be a major beginning, a major low point in the economy of the world, mm-hmm. and that October 25th may well be a day when everything crashes. Now, that's a date that's coming up next Sunday.
Well, a lot of the reading I've been doing would concur with that, although they wouldn't pick a specific date, mm-hmm. That in spite of the economy, or rather the stock market, hitting over 10,000 this past week for the first time in a couple of years now, that it's built on a house of cards. Again, about a third of the volume of the Dow Jones Industrials, Dow Jones Industrial Average, is comprised by major financial institutions like Bank of America, Citi, Freddie Mae, or Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Mm-hmm. And all four of those institutions received huge infusions of cash from the American taxpayer through TARP and the bailout programs.
And they're institutions that have lost their moorings. I mean, they essentially are – they're pretty much bankrupt.
Right. They're being floated by taxpayer dollars right now. Mm-hmm. Max Keiser is an independent economic analyst who's become pretty popular on the internet. And he's an interesting guy because he just basically says flat out, I watched an interview with him last night on a news channel in, I believe, Canada or Paris, one or the other. It was a French language channel. And he was asked by the moderator whether the 10,000 close on the Dow was just fizzle. Or was it fluff? And he said the word's not fluff, it's fraud. And basically calls the heads of the main Wall Street banks involved in the collapse economic terrorists. I think that I went back and looked for some research that I referenced during a show a couple of weeks ago, a chart tracking world industrial output today versus during the Great Depression. A couple of economists have been updating a series of research articles that they've been doing comparing this economic downturn with the Great Depression of the early 1930s. And when you look at the chart tracking current economic or industrial output versus the industrial output of 1930-31, you saw a bit of a fishhook shape in the 1930 industrial output trend, which was then followed by a drop off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing so far in 2009 is that same shape, a bit of a fishhook, where we're seeing what looks like a rebound, and I'm seeing it at work. We're seeing, you know, an upturn in sales, and everybody's happy about that. However, the downturn was much greater. We went much lower in relative terms than we did in 1930 before hitting that rebound,
mm-hmm.
which, if the pattern holds, and I don't know whether it will or not. I suspect it will, but I, you know, again, if I knew this stuff that well, I'd be making money telling other people how to invest money. If the pattern holds, then we're due for a drop off of this,
mm-hmm.
you know, this cliff, this fishhook. But because the scale of the original downturn was much greater in 2009 than it was in 1930, it would follow that the drop off the cliff would also be much greater.
Mm-hmm.
So the web bots may be onto something. Whether they hit the date on the head or not is still to be seen. But
it's so interesting that it's a hook shape.
Yeah. Well, you know, it
hooking the suckers.
Hooking
into the
rally. Suckers into the suckers rally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that may well be the case.
Not a sucre rally.
No, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But while we're on the topic of these major banksters in the United States, you also picked up on an interesting story this week that the federal pay czar is telling Ken Lewis, the CEO of Bank of America, that he can't take any pay this year.
In other words, the United States government can now tell banks what they can and can't.
Right. Employees of private institutions, what they can and cannot do. The chairman of the board of Bank of America, Ken Lewis, was ordered by Kenneth Feinberg, President Obama's pay czar, mm-hmm. that he has to work for free this mm-hmm. year. He's got to repay. Not only does he have to forego compensation for the last 3 months of the year, but he's got to give back the $1 million he's already received for 2009.
Exactly. You got to keep working. You can't leave, but you have to work for nothing now.
Yep. Lewis gave in and said it was in the best interest of Bank of America not to get involved in a dispute with the paymaster. Those are his terms.
Yes.
The paymaster. Now, this is disturbing in a couple of ways. First of all, the United States government not only can tell – it's bad enough that the government stepped in and told Ken Lewis that he had to give back all this money. Now, a lot of us out here in middle America, in flyover land – aren't going to be too sympathetic to Ken Lewis because he's got plenty. He's not going to be hurting too badly from giving up his million. The point, however, is that the government now apparently has the authority to go in and tell private employers, private employees, what they can and cannot take home in their check in any given week. What's worse is, and this is what got me started down this line of research, a lot of conservatives, you know, apologists for the Republican Party, defended the TARP plan when it was proposed last fall. We need to bail out the banks because they're the cornerstone of our economy. And they're now turning around and saying, oh, but you can't tell, you can't manipulate the market, the free market in this way. You cannot start setting pay for the employees of private corporations. However, it's come out through a Freedom of Information Act request that Bank of America and the other eight banks that were part of the original TARP plan under the Bush administration were essentially told point blank by Ben Bernanke and then Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson that they had to take the money. You don't have a choice. We are going to buy into your corporations. And now since the government is essentially at least a minority owner in these corporations, the government, of course, now wants to exercise the authority that it promised it wouldn't exercise. Oh, we'll just be silent partners. We're not going to tell you how to run your business, except that you're not going to get a paycheck. And you're going to have to give back the money you got. And you're not getting a bonus.
How is this different than Venezuela, where Chavez nationalized various aspects of industry and told them what they could and couldn't do?
You know, it's really not.
No, it isn't.
It's really not. Pretty sweet deal for Chavez and his ilk. Huh? Sweet, there's a little play on words.
The sucre. I know, sucre.
French word for sugar, if I remember my high school French.
It is indeed, and it's very sweet. It's now the currency used by Venezuela and eight other countries down there, South America. They got together in this little pact, and they essentially have kicked out the dollar.
The dollar is no longer the de facto reserve currency for these nations. It's Venezuela, Bolivia, which makes sense, Cuba, Ecuador, Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominica, St. Vincent and Antigua, and Barbuda. So a few of the smaller islands there, as well as some of the more left-leaning states in Central and South America. They're kind of modeling this on the way the euro was introduced in the EU.
We've seen a lot of stories over the last 10 days about the dollar losing its value. And we've been, you know, we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, but it's really sliding now. The dollar essentially is dead.
Yeah, it will likely be replaced in international transactions by special drawing rights. And I wouldn't be too surprised if we didn't see oil denominated in special drawing rights here within the next couple of years.
Well, and I think that was the whole point of the sucre, is that they didn't want to, Chavez and the other leaders did not want to be beholden in any way to the IMF. They were trying to sidestep the Bretton Woods idea and preempt it.
Well,
but the question is, what's going to be the, is it going to be the SDR? Will it be the euro? China wants it to be the yuan. Russia wants it to be the ruble.
Well, it's all, you know, may you live in interesting times.
We certainly are. Yes, we do. That what it comes down to, though, is that eventually our dollar will be worth nothing. Because it's backed by nothing.
Right. It's free floating. And that's the thing to remember. I think as consumers, when we go to the store, we tend to think of the dollar as being of fixed value and the prices of the things that we buy fluctuating up and down. But the fact is the dollar is a commodity, just like baseball cards or hairspray or whatever. And the value of the dollar is in the relative scarcity of it. When there are more in circulation, they're worth less, and you have to use more of them to buy, you know, to trade for that tube of toothpaste or that house.
So right now, we've talked about this for many, many years, and we've said it so many times. It's not necessarily a great idea to go out, especially now with the price of gold really, really high. You know, don't necessarily take your life savings and convert it into as many ounces of gold as you can buy. If you want to buy gold, we can't stop you. But as for this household, mm-hmm. we think it's wiser to buy things you really can use in life. Mm-hmm. Gold is, at best, something that may...
It's another medium
maybe
of exchange.
Take it away from you.
Well, sure. It's another medium of exchange, just
exactly.
like paper money.
But why do you use a medium of exchange? It's to buy things you can live with.
Right, right.
Food you can eat, water you can drink, household goods to keep you healthy and to keep your house clean and
sure.
sanitary. Those items right now, honestly, in the grocery stores are about as cheap as they've been in the last year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Take the dollars that are next to worthless now, if you can afford it, and go to a big box store or go to your local Aldi or some other discount store and buy as many long shelf life items as you can, things that your family truly will use. Buy things that, you know, like rice and beans and other dried things like that, but also buy stuff that doesn't require water or heat in order to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Buy things that are in cans. One of my favorite things, honestly, are tortillas, flour tortillas, because they keep forever,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether they're refrigerated or not, because they have no yeast in them, they're not going to necessarily mold really fast. So they just seem to last months and months and months and months. And if you stick them in your freezer now and, you know, say something were to happen 2 weeks from now, you get them out of your freezer, put them on a shelf, and they'll last probably for 6 months to a year. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Long time. And you can consume those, use that as your bread. You can have tuna. You can have canned chicken, canned beef, whatever you want. You can make sandwiches out of it. You can make desserts out of it if you can cook.
Mm-hmm.
You can fry those things up. And I mean, it's amazing what you can do with a tortilla. Another good thing I love are canned beans and canned vegetables that
mm-hmm.
you can just literally open up with your non-electric can opener.
Right.
Make sure you have a couple of those because they wear out. And just sit there and eat with a spoon if you have to.
The bottom line is that regardless of whether you got your money in gold, silver, or some other medium of exchange, at some point you need to trade those for things that you can consume
mm-hmm.
or things that you need to provide shelter or heat.
Exactly. And right now, Walmart and many other stores have a very short window on supply chain. It's
mm-hmm.
essentially they've got 2 or 3 days worth of goods in their warehouses. If something were to happen in the United States that cuts off trucking, your local Walmart may not be able to restock.
Yeah, run out of stuff in a few
weeks
days.
Or months.
Yeah.
In other words, whatever is on their shelf is going to be the only thing that they have for the entire community for a long time, and the value of that can of beans is going to go way up. Would mm-hmm. you rather buy it today for 25 cents, or do you want to buy it for $25?
Exactly right. And I think about that every time I see those commercials on TV that say gold has never gone down in value, has never been worth zero. Well, yeah, but again, the value of a can of beans is the same today as it will be tomorrow.
Exactly.
Although
nutritionally,
nutritionally, right? That's the value. It's just that in the event of an emergency, the value of that can of beans relative to gold or paper money or whatever may go up or down because suddenly the scarcity will kick in.
Mm-hmm. In fact, at my Facebook account, I post a note on my account asking what do you think should be in your pantry, in your emergency pantry. And I said, okay, here's what I can think of off the top of my head. And many of you answered and you said, okay, well, this should be in there and this should be in there and this is what I think you. And from all of those responses, and if you have joined me on Facebook, get in there and respond to the note. If you haven't, please add me as your friend and you can get on there and take a look at it. From all of that, I want to put together a big master list that we can have online.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really don't know where to start, especially for those of you, and this is most of us, frankly, who don't have a whole lot of extra income. What can I buy? What can I do to help my family? There are a lot of things you can buy very cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
And again, grocery prices are really low right now.
And again, with the understanding that this is not to build up a hoard or to hoard items or to stockpile them to then, you know, create a literal bunker mm-hmm. if things do go bad, but to have things available that you can share and use to demonstrate the love of Christ.
Exactly. More of a Joseph project. I mean,
yes.
The Lord gave him warning far in advance, and Joseph was able to, you know, put aside so much, and they were able to share. And through that, the Lord preserved many, many families. Mm-hmm. And the fame of Jehovah, the fact that Joseph had been given this information, I'm sure influenced many people to believe in the Lord God Jehovah at that time that maybe didn't. I'm sure a lot of Egyptians came to know the God of the Israelites. We can share Christ by sharing a can of beans.
Yeah, it's and that's the bottom line. You know, it's not about God, guns, and gold. While again, there's nothing inherently wrong with having a gun or with hedging your financial security with gold. The goal is not to use those items to barricade yourself from the world if and when things do go bad. So,
how are we doing on time?
Well, we're at about 45 minutes, and we got a couple of calls, voicemail calls.
Oh, that's right.
Hi, Derek and Sharon. This is Paddy Heron over in the Emerald Isle. How are you? You know, I got all my files wiped off my computer a couple of months ago, and you've been on my heart a lot. I have a new book out called The Return of the Antichrist and the New World Order, and would love to do an interview with you guys. It's a pretty radical book again. It's like the Nephilim Part 2, and I'm getting a fantastic response from it. A lot of new stuff emerging from the secrets of Revelation. So if you still have my email, drop me a line, or I'll try and find you guys. I'm sure you're somewhere. PID, I'll Google that. Thanks. Hope you both are well. God bless.
You know, Paddy Heron is one of my favorite people. He really is, and I have loved interviewing him in the past. And Paddy, honey, we will definitely get you back on PID. And VFTB, you've not been on View from the Bunker yet.
Yes. Well,
you with the new book out. And I've got a copy of that book, by the way. He did send it to me in an email.
Okay, very cool. I know that he was on Future Quake with Dr. Future mm-hmm. and Tom Bionic recently. And so definitely an interview to listen to there. And I'll send back a note. I've been meaning to do it for a few days because you told me about this when you got the email from Patty. Mm-hmm. And so I am remiss, but I will send an email to Dr. Heron later today and make sure we get him on the schedule very, very soon.
Also, when he does come on, he can explain to us what happened with that Lisbon vote.
Yeah, exactly.
I asked him in the email, and he said essentially that the Irish people were sort of terrified into voting for it, that they were told if you don't vote for it, that your economy is going to get even worse. So
yeah,
take a look at Ireland, and that's what's going to happen here, people.
The economy of Ireland went from being the most robust and rapidly expanding in Europe to the one crashing at the fastest rate within about 18 months.
Well, and frankly, a story that we didn't talk about on this show, and we're going to go long if I get into it too much, is the British Lord who was speaking at a meeting and talking about how in December in Copenhagen that mm-hmm. if Obama signs, and I assume he meant the Kyoto Protocols because the actual document itself from the UN was signed by first President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in office. But if indeed Obama signs on the dotted line, he is selling us out.
Yeah.
And that's what this professor says. We'll put a link to that article if you've missed
it. Yeah, Lord Monckton, I believe.
Monckton.
Yeah, he was a very outspoken global warming, climate change mm-hmm. skeptic.
Yeah, he talked about having read the 200-page document and it's actually about 180 some pages, but I've actually got the PDF on my desktop, and I was reading through it, and the original document was signed, the one that's about 180 pages. It was signed by First President Bush. Mm. It's the Kyoto Protocols that were not signed. However, my understanding is that there have been other committees that have met in the interim that have come up with various ideas of how to get past 2012, because Kyoto only goes to 2012, and the original agreement that Bush 41 signed was saying, okay, we agree that there's global warming and that humans are causing it, and we need to do something about it, and it was very detailed as to how money was going to be transferred from the Annex One countries to the other countries that were essentially developing Annex One. That includes the United States, essentially the people with the money. That it's very similar to the cap and trade thing, which is smoke and mirrors, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's all about redistribution of wealth. And if Obama, the Kyoto Protocol and other things like it are actually the muscle that is behind the original document that Bush 41 signed. So how are we going to implement this, and what sort of punishments are going to be in place if the countries don't play ball? Anyway, that's something, again, that we can talk to, that it connects in with the Lisbon Treaty and the whole fact that we have already moved to a world government. The citizens just don't know it yet.
Exactly right. And that all fits into the end times picture that was prophesied by Daniel and, well, Jesus through John the Revelator. And it is coming.
Amen. So. Hey, you know what? We got another Skype phone call. By the way, if you want to call us on Skype, you can reach us at 317-489-9350. That's 317-489-9350. And you
code?
Can leave the country code is 1.
1.
And you can leave us a message just like Preacher Tony did.
Hey, Derek and Sharon, this is Tony from Anderson, South Carolina. Preacher Tony. It's going to sound, I guess, somewhat unbelievable, but I was going back listening to some podcasts that I haven't got a chance to listen to lately, and it was at the end of the one that you recorded on 9/19, and you gave the telephone number, and I've been meaning to call, and I said, I'm going to call, and then right after you gave the number, you promoted my program, linked at your website, so just want to let you know I do appreciate what you do for the Bible broadcast and the exposure that you and Sharon give it. But also just want to thank you for the programs that you continue to produce. Last time we talked, when you interviewed me, recorded me for the interview, I was mentioning that we were expecting our first child. Well, the day that you mentioned my name on your program on 9/19, she was born the next day on September the 20th. So we've got a lot to look forward to. A lot of good things have happened. She's safe and healthy. There at the website, there's some pictures up there also. So just want to let you know I appreciate what you do. Take care. See you and Sharon later.
Well, praise God. That is wonderful news. Tony and his wife in the pictures look just as happy as can be.
They do. That's a beautiful little girl.
She is beautiful. What a gift from God. start reminiscing
thinking,
and I'll get
I was just thinking about the song you said was playing at the moment that Nicole was born.
Yeah, it was Fine Young Cannibals. She Drives Me Crazy. That
how
was
prophetic.
Back when I was still in my
Lord
top 40
her.
Days. But no, the song that always comes to mind when I think of those days is a song that barbershop quartet that I was in back in Peoria, Illinois, back in the mid-80s, used to sing called Little Girl.
Aww.
And so it kind of...
You know, there's a tendency, and I didn't realize this when I was growing up, of course. I always thought, oh, gosh, I'm growing up. Leave me alone. But you do. You tend to think of your children as little kids.
Yeah.
Because it's like you freeze them in your mind somehow at age 8 or 9 or something, and they never grow up past that.
Yeah. Well, can't help it. And so I have a better understanding of what my parents went through when I went off to college. You know, so now Nicole is about that age now.
Uh-huh.
She is off to college, and so we're,
and many of our listeners have kids in college as well, and grandkids, some of them. We also, by the way, since we're talking about our Skype phone calls, and again, we'd love to hear from you. We also want to thank a couple of listeners that continue to offer support to PID Radio. Marsha and Jared, two different listeners that have decided to help out in various ways. And you know what? You are so faithful about sending these things in. And I can't thank you enough, because the Lord has put us in a position where we are renting a home from a wonderful Christian family that they can't, they're just not in a position, because they are in the ministry, they're not in a position to make a lot of the repairs on the house. So we're footing the bill for many of the things that are taking place here in the house. And just recently we had a major leak in the roof, and we had to fix it.
We
may still have more repairs yet to make, because when he was up there fixing it, he said, you know, you need to take a look at that chimney.
Yeah, and they didn't use drip what do they call it, drip stop or drip pan or something. Anyway, basically
something about the roof. I don't know.
Yeah, the decking of the roof, he said, is going to have to be replaced if and when the roof goes. And this roof was old 10 years ago. So it's 100. The home is about 102 years old.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful home.
It is. And they took good care of the house. It isn't that.
Right.
It's just they live in Florida and, you know, they're just not in a position. And so the Lord is enabling us to help them out. And because we help them out, mm-hmm. sometimes we don't always have quite enough to cover the PID bills for the month. And you guys have really, you stepped in. You know, we've been doing our best. Praise the Lord. He's always provided everything we need, and he's given us what we've needed to pay for the various charges that are incurred every month for putting PID and all of the bandwidth and all that stuff. But you know what? Many of you have stepped up, and you're helping out. And I suspect that some of you are doing so, and it's pinching. Because I know Derek and I have many times, if somebody really needed it, if we, okay, well, we can pinch ourselves this month and help this person out. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that, make sure the Lord is calling you to do that. Because you know what? We don't want to put anybody in financial distress. The Lord is going to always provide for us. We trust in him to take care of us mm-hmm. and to provide everything we need for not only our home, but also for our ministry. If you're helping us out because you have excess, Lord love you. We're so grateful. But please don't put yourselves in a financial distress.
Absolutely not. And again, thank you, because we know that this is really coming from the heart. So,
it is.
And we're really humbled by the... Your generous stuff.
I mean, if you saw the looks on our faces whenever we get notification from PayPal or a check comes in the mail, we start praying and we just get teary-eyed sometimes, because you guys are so generous and so wonderful. And it goes along with the many prayers that we get, too. We get lots of email from many of you listeners saying how you're praying for us. You're praying for Sam. And you know what? He's got his own, by the way, he's got his own page at Facebook now. So if you have not joined Sam's fan page, then you need to get over there, because he likes to check it every day. He jumps into Derek's lap, and it's like he looks at the screen.
Yeah, it's almost... unnerving.
Yeah, and he's only been doing that since he got his own page. It's kind of funny.
But sometimes he does need prayer, because, boy, he picks up on something out in the yard that shouldn't be there, and he takes off after it without even really stopping to think, let's see, that's a skunk. I should mm-hmm. probably wait here.
Yeah, Sam really has no fear, and he needs to have some fear.
Yeah, he tore after that raccoon that night, and that was a little nerve-wracking. So which is odd, because we live in an old section of town. I mean, again, this house is 100 years old. So been people living in this neighborhood for over 100 years. So where are the raccoons and the possums and the groundhogs coming from? I'd like to know.
It's well, there's that interdimensional door at the end, the edge of
in between
the
garages there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's the only thing that makes sense, because when stuff, you know, goes around that corner, it just goes
disappears.
To nowhere. Yeah, it disappears.
That's a good point.
Speaking of doorways opening up, CERN is still possibly going to start up, and there's been the most interesting scuttlebutt.
I'm glad you brought that up, because there were a number of stories that we're not going to get to tonight, but I definitely wanted to get to this one. This is really interesting. And, you know, the other stories we've dealt with, and there are plenty of other people talking about, you know, healthcare debate and all that other fun, you know, stuff. But the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which was prominently featured in Dan Brown's book Angels and Demons, soon to be a major motion picture. Or is it already? I forget what
it already is.
Yeah, okay. Well, not that major then. It just slipped right by without me noticing. But a couple
we
of
just
physicists.
Don't go to the theaters.
Yeah, a couple of physicists have postulated that the reason that CERN is having so much trouble with the Large Hadron Collider is the Large Hadron Collider in the future. That perhaps by searching for the Higgs boson, which is this super heavy subatomic particle. That
codenamed the God particle.
Codenamed the God, yeah. Nicknamed the God particle. That God himself may be intervening to prevent the Large Hadron Collider from actually discovering it.
These guys are physicists.
Yes. Holger B. Nielsen and Masao Ninomaya, quote, "We propose an experiment which consists of drawing a card and using it to decide restrictions on the running of the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, such as luminosity and beam energy. there may potentially occur total shutdown, which, as we know, is what happened when they mm-hmm. turned it on last September. The purpose of such an experiment is to search for influence from the future, that is, backward causation. Since LHC will produce particles of a mathematically new type of fundamental scalars, i.e. the Higgs particles, there is potentially a chance to find unseen effects such as an influence, such as on influence going from future to past, which we suggest in the present paper. In other words, they turn it on in the future
and
it retroactively
and breaks
down the LHC in the past so that it can't turn on in the future.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it bizarre?
I know, it really, really is strange. And I know that they're hoping to start up again before the end of the year. So if you haven't read Angels and Demons, I highly recommend reading that. Don't go to the movie. Just read the book.
Yeah, and they actually postulate that it may be the hand of God in their paper, which is really interesting coming from physicists.
Yeah. Well, speaking of physics, and we'll do this last story before we get out of here, there was a story that I put at PID News this week about a mini black hole that was created. First black hole for light created on Earth, an an electromagnetic black hole that sucks in surrounding light has been built for the first time. This was based on research done at Purdue, but it was actually built by scientists in Japan, I think.
Japan or China, I forget.
Yeah, full report. I'm clicking on that link right now. It's an interesting. In fact, I asked a friend of ours who is a physicist and who works at JPL, by the way. I asked him exactly what this means, and does it mean that it's an actual black hole? And he says, no, it just bends light. Mm-hmm. It's not sucking in everything in the area. It's just bending light. And so I asked, well, then can this be used for military applications? In other words, can we now bend light in a way that makes an object invisible?
And from what I read on a report, the answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This device works at microwave frequencies. Now, theoretically, it could be used mm-hmm. to create an invisibility cloak, but they've not yet developed a way to make it bend visible light, which is operating at a much...
Exactly. But bear in mind, we've said this many, many times, if it's in the public news,
mm-hmm.
it's old.
Right, the stuff being done at places like DARPA.
Exactly.
You're way ahead, yep.
Watch Eureka.
Yeah, there you go. So, interesting. It called a black hole, but not really a black hole, just something that traps light, which may have practical applications for solar energy.
Well, that's what they're claiming, is it's going to improve the solar energy applications, mm-hmm. Which sounds like a perpetual motion machine to me.
Well, if they can invent it, good on them.
Well, I asked Chuck about that too. I said, if it's drawing the light from the surrounding area, would it then cause a temperature flux to take place? Would it become cold in the surrounding area because it's taking energy from the room mm-hmm. to provide heat for the room? And that's when he wrote back and said, apparently, this is a perpetual motion machine.
Yeah, yeah. You got to get around that conservation of energy thing, huh? Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see how that is eventually brought mm-hmm. to market.
Well, you and I were talking about the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, and we started even discussing it in light of, could it be possible, and we'll leave you with this, that God has put his hand of restraint upon that collider from what we perceive as a future moment, and said, not yet, and he will release his hand at the same moment that we are raptured.
That would be really interesting. And that way they could blame the rapture on a malfunction of the Large Hadron Collider.
Exactly.
Oh, it sent off this delta wave.
Yeah, exactly. And there was this weird effect of a paradox happened, and all of these people they're just gone now.
We forgot to reverse the polarity. Well,
we left the door open. We're really
sorry. It was a squirrel.
They were hiding in the...
A squirrel bit the wires.
From the future. Well, we're getting silly now, and Sam says it's time to go.
Yeah. Well, hey, this week on A View from the Bunker, Constance Cumby talks about the convergence of the New Age movement and evangelical Christianity.
Oh, you don't want to miss this one.
Yeah. She has graciously made her books available online, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow and The Coming Deception. it is it's foundational information, and I just really feel compelled lately to talk about this and to really dig more into the, mm-hmm. the Dominionist movement, because mm-hmm. I see this as, well, even though we've been talking about it for a couple of years now with Paul and Philip Collins and Tom Horn and others, that this is a greater threat to Christianity mm-hmm. than the threats that are put before us, like radical Islam or secular humanism.
Right.
Because a lot of us just don't want to look around and see that some of the members of the flock have suspiciously long and pointy teeth. And that's what it is. That's mm-hmm. what's happened. The movement has been Christianity in the United States has been co-opted by a movement that is essentially Gnostic in mm-hmm. origin. Mm-hmm. And Constance Cumby will talk about that on A View from the Bunker. And
coming soon to a church near you.
Right. Paul and Philip Collins will get into that in 2 weeks' time. So that's this week. And meanwhile, you drop us an email at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can join us at Twitter and Facebook. And please add us as your friends and join Sam's fan
join
page.
Sam's fans page. Until then, next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Living in the